All right, we took a short break, and we are back now with Charlene Wilson. And Charlene, one of the things that can be kind of frustrating sometimes for an interviewer is when he asks the same question several times and feels like he's not really getting an answer. And during the break, I guess we kind of came to the conclusion that you don't really know how what is purported to be a four-page confession to your being present at the murders of the boys, how this four-page document did come together. You, if I understand you correctly, you think that some of the handwriting might be yours, but obviously a lot of it is not yours, and we don't know if this is a copy and paste job or what it is, but we do know that somehow, way back in, what was it, 1992 we're talking about? They say 93, but you're thinking 92. At the Faulkner County Jail, you must have given them something. You must have given them enough about the boys in the tracks that you were allowed to go back to the Saline County Jail, because after 2.5 days of being in a straitjacket, not being allowed to go to the bathroom, not even being allowed to eat, you're ready to say or do whatever, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, just for note, I have never seen this, what y'all call it?
Confession.
Confession until today. Until today, I've never seen it.
Now, let me ask you this. having read this four-page document today, do you understand now why for years a number of different people have wanted to ask you about it? Because for a lot of people who were not around then, it looks like something that really needs to be investigated. And yet you, the person who they say signed the document, you recognize a few things, but most of it is very foreign to you, if I understand correctly.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. I mean, I don't know. Half of those people, they got mentioned in there. And there has never been, in my whole life, a black man involved in any of this. I don't know who, 6, 8, 10 of those people are.
Let's see. It says, that day earlier, Larry Rochelle and I, Charlene Wilson and Larry Rochelle, planned to meet with Dan Harmon to make a pickup at Alexander. It goes on and on. I'm not going to read the whole four-page document, but a lot of details here. And I guess we will post the document on the website that Gene Duffy and Linda Ives have had now for over 20 years, idfiles.com. But a number of names, Keith McCaskill, Larry Rochelle. At any rate, somehow you were able to give them enough information to let you go back to Saline County, mm-hmm. get out of that hellhole in Faulkner County. Mm-hmm. And as far as you can tell, they manufactured a lot of other stuff, put together a document, and put it in a box for who knows why, because you're already in jail, and Danny Harmon is already getting you a ridiculously long prison sentence for a ridiculously minor charge. So I guess at this point, what we want to do is go to what you were trying to get to earlier, which was that night. Now that we've kind of done the best we could with what's purported to be a confession, you were with Danny Harmon the evening of August 22nd, going into the early morning hours of August 23rd, in his vehicle.
No, my vehicle.
Your vehicle. I apologize. But Shobe Road, Saline County, close to the tracks. So you're with Danny Harmon. He's in your vehicle. You and Danny Harmon had been seeing each other on somewhat of a romantic basis, also very much a drug-oriented basis. It's no secret that Danny Harmon was a private attorney who a judge allowed to run a grand jury which was supposed to be looking into the murders of the boys, but instead looked into all kinds of other stuff. It's no secret that Danny Harmon dealt drugs. It's no secret that he eventually became the prosecuting attorney. It's no secret that several years later, you know, kind of what goes around comes around thing. After he has you put in jail, then he himself goes to jail for dealing drugs. A lot of folks think that he is not the most upstanding citizen of Saline County, but that's a whole other show. So anyway, so the night of August 22nd, 1987, you and Danny are together and you're in your vehicle. And what happens?
And we go to make the usual pickup. I mean, it wasn't the first time.
Right.
And it wasn't going to be the last time.
So you're doing a drug deal.
And
where are you going? Shub Road?
I don't know whose property it was. It was a little deserted area. It was heavily wooded in areas. Had a little road that cut back off that led right back to the tracks.
Yeah, yeah.
But I never was able to go and pick that up.
Now, is this the wooded area close to the tracks you're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Does this have anything to do with low-flying airplanes dropping off bundles of drugs? In other words, people in the area, northern Saline County, had been complaining for quite some time about low-flying airplanes late at night on the weekends and bundles being dropped and that sort of thing. Okay, so you get there. You're familiar with the area. It's a wooded area. You remember what Dan Harmon said before he left you and your vehicle?
Yeah, he said, I'll be back in a few minutes.
Be back in a few minutes.
Yeah, but those few minutes. And he throwed me almost an ounce of coke.
So
I was happy.
So to kind of keep you occupied.
Yeah.
Back before you had smartphones, you don't have any video games to play. So you're doing some drugs. So I'll be back in a few minutes.
Mm-hmm. However, the few minutes kind of turned into like
hours.
He came back but he never came up to me. He did come back to the car, I would say about
a couple hours later,
somewhere along in there, give or take.
Yeah.
And popped open my trunk and got an old tarp I had in there.
Oh, my.
For moving purposes.
A tarp.
Yeah. Because I had just moved to Benton, and I folded it, I folded it up and I put it in there.
Did he tell you why he needed the tarp?
Nope. I didn't ask. I didn't care.
And it kind of makes you wonder if the tarp was the tarp that the three guys on the railroad train saw on the boys' bodies, and then the deputy said, there's no tarp, the alleged tarp, and then one of the guys on the train says, yeah, this tarp. So it kind of makes you wonder about that. So he takes the tarp.
Mm-hmm. And goes back.
And then he comes back a few minutes later?
No, it was a long while longer. I would say 45 minutes, maybe 2 hours-ish.
45 minutes,
and then he came back, jerked open the door of the car, jumped in, went to start it, and I looked up and I said, oh, did you cut yourself? There's some blood on your pants right there. And he looked at his arms and he looked at his pants and he said, yeah, I probably did. And he said, let's get the hell, heck out of here. And we did.
Yeah.
I never thought nothing else about it until a few days later.
Can I ask you one more thing before we talk about what happened a few days later?
Sure.
Did you hear the sound of gunshots at any point?
No, I did not.
Did you hear any screaming?
No, I did not.
But again, you are...
I did see some kids running through the woods.
Okay, you saw kids running through the woods.
Oh, yeah. Some little boys. One of them, right in front of my car.
Running real fast.
Oh, yeah.
Did you recognize them?
Nope, they were kids.
But you were possibly how far away from the tracks at this point? Far enough away that you wouldn't have heard something?
I was listening to the radio.
Yes.
And I was very... Hi, and I did not care what was going on there.
You're right.
I had my little playpen that I'd done countless times before.
Right.
And I didn't, the only thing that really scared me that night was because I had been told that before we had went that night to pick it up, that somebody was taking some of the stuff, some of the drugs.
So somebody was stealing some of the drugs.
Yeah. I assumed that they were those kids,
Yeah.
And I had relayed that down the road to Miss Duffy after we had talked several times. And
when she was in charge of the drug task force.
Oh, look, she blew my case wide open. I don't know what I would have done without her, because I think she's the only reason I'm alive today.
So the kids, and that's a good thing. So the kids that ran by the car, middle school age, high school age?
10-ish or so. You know.
Did you say around 10? Like 10
10-ish,
years old?
10-ish, 11.
10, 11, 12, yeah, something like that?
Yeah, some of, they were just young, like preteen, you know, the gawky kids look.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. About three of them, three or four of them running by.
I saw three. Run across, you know, they were going the opposite way that Danny had went. Then that's how I knew.
Yeah, that could have saved their lives. Okay.
Right. I'm sure that I know today that it did.
Yeah. So I apologize for interrupting.
Okay, I'm going to tell you, and that's sort of still there.
Go ahead.
I came, okay, that night when I got back to my trailer, it was pretty rough. I was extremely high. I had been up for days. Mm. And I passed out. When I woke up late the afternoon, I thought it was just one day later, was actually 2 days later. And
so you're waking up Monday afternoon,
the
24th.
Yeah, and all of a sudden, I snap. Something in me says something ain't right. And I tried to call Dan.
Yeah.
And he wasn't answering. I really did.
And this is back when nobody had a cell phone. So you can't get a hold of Dan Harmon. Hang on. It's a day and a half after the murders, which you haven't heard about yet because you're trying to sleep off being on cocaine and up for days.
Right.
But you said, wait a minute, there are things missing?
Yeah. In my home and in my, I couldn't find my car. My car went in there and I was upset because I couldn't go anywhere.
Without your car.
Without my vehicle.
And Harmon's not answering the phone.
And Hunter, right, exactly. The following day after I had woke up kind of in the swarm, I am doing laundry. And I was listening to the 6 o'clock news.
So you got the TV on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It showed the train tracks. I'm watching. So I turned the TV up, sat down, and they were talking about
Kevin Ives and Don Henley.
Yeah, those, that they were dead and that they were covered in a tarp and that they had passed out smoking marijuana cigarette. I flipped out, and then I clicked. That was really blood on his khaki pants.
Danny Harmon's khaki pants when he came back after being gone for a couple
hours. So I went and got me a tape recorder and a couple little cassette tapes. I was scared. I taped a conversation with me and Danny on the telephone about them boys. I asked him point blank, you said that night when you came to the car, you had blood on your pants. I said, Danny, what happened to them boys? And I got the ever-loving fool knocked out of me.
On the phone?
No, I wasn't on the phone with him then. I had taped him on the phone.
Yeah.
I'm confronting him with it.
Oh,
I made the mistake of saying, I got you on tape, threatening me.
That would be a big mistake. So, in other words, he became physically violent with
you. Oh, yeah. Real violent. And tried to choke me down. Well, I'm a pretty stout girl, and I managed to keep him fended off, but I had the heck beat out of me.
Let the record reflect that there are numerous instances in Mayor Leverett's book, The Boys in the Tracks, in which there are allegations of Danny Harmon being violent with women, if it pleased the court.
Yes. A bunch of women. And when I told him that, he said, you want me to say the B word? I'm not going to say the B word. He told me
I think we all know
that
what
he
it is.
Would end, that this was it, this was the end, and that my life as I knew it was over. And I got very scared. And at that time, I left darn near every thing I had in that mobile home up there, and I went to my father's and mother's.
Where do they live?
Prattsville, Arkansas.
Okay.
And my daddy, I told them everything.
I
told them what was happening. Well, I gave the tape to my father. And my father protected me. God rest his soul, to the very end of his life. And he did not stand the thought that he was going to leave this world. And his little girl was in prison. You know, he had protected me for so long from this corruption.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah. he knew Danny. Danny went to beat me one night out of my camper that I had parked at my mom and dad's place. They had come up with some stuff missing, some cocaine missing. Well, I got the blame for it, and I had not even been around at that time. Well, he came up at my house and my mom and dad's place, and he was jerking and pulling on my hair, trying to get me out of that camper. And my daddy had a long barrel 22. And my daddy stuck it to the back of Dan Holman's head while he was trying to get me out of that trailer. And he said, "I've lived my life. Had you lived yours?" And Dan stopped. And he said, "Mr. Wilson," he said, "I'm a court representative, and you really just need to step back and let me handle that." And my daddy said, "I know what you bad words, all explain, are doing." He said, "And it stops today. Get off my property, or I will kill you where you stand."
If I may interject an opinion, it sounds like it couldn't have happened to a nicer guy.
Oh, absolutely.
A more deserving guy. Your father showed great restraint for not going ahead and blowing him away then anyway.
Trust me, he wanted to.
Yeah.
Mother was pulling on him, and I'm screaming at the top of my voice, "Please don't, Daddy. Please don't, Daddy. Please." But, you know, had my father not intervened that night, there's no telling what would have happened.
Before we conclude, I think the record should reflect that Ms. Charlene Wilson has been very kind and gracious to allow us to interview her today. And I began the interview talking about how she wanted to set the record straight, but perhaps we need to be a little bit more specific about this. Ms. Wilson is undergoing cancer treatments. She has outlived the doctor's predictions of how long she'd still be here. And she has much to be thankful for. But she's made it very clear to us when the tape was not rolling that when she leaves this mortal coil and goes to join her Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, she realizes there's no more sorrow there. But if possible, she would like people to know that she did not do the things in the supposed confession which law enforcement at the time concocted and put her name on, which law enforcement at the time, and again, she alleges that then Saline County Sheriff Judy Pridgen took her to the Faulkner County Jail, and she was left there in a straitjacket, not allowed to eat or even go to the bathroom for 2.5 days. And to the point that, what do you want me to do to get out of here and go back to Saline County Jail in Benton? But she just wanted it to be on the record that this is not her confession, that she neither saw nor participated in any violence in the early morning hours of August 23rd, 1987, when Kevin Ives and Don Henry were brutally murdered, and that she definitely does allege that what other people have alleged, that Danny Harmon was very much a part of the situation. Ms. Wilson, is there anything you want to add to that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pray for me.
Yes, ma'am.
Pray God's will and his mercy.
Yes, ma'am.
And more than anything, and I say this to Miss Ives and Mr. I do not, you know, I wish I could help more. I've wished I would have never got involved. But more than anything, one day they will know whether it is this earth or that which is to come.
Yes.
And she will be reunited with her son, Anna. He won't be hurting anymore, and neither will they. And I'm sorry for all the wrong that I did. I have been, I'm 25 years clean and sober. I'm not by any means a stupid woman, even though I did some real stupid things. It's all about our choices, and I made bad choices. Pray for me, pray for the situation, and that God will open doors no man can shut.
Amen.
And that justice will come.
Amen. And speaking of justice coming, again, some people are held accountable for crimes they've committed on this earth. Some people have to stand before God, as we all do, and give account for what we've done here. So sometimes it seems that justice is elusive when people are not held accountable in a court of law on this earth. And yet, there is no statute of limitations for murder in the United States of America. And Dan Harmon is still very much alive in Saline County, Arkansas.
So is Jay Campbell, and so is Jay Campbell and
Kirk Lang.
Kirk Lang, yes.
But you didn't. You saw Dan Harmon, but you didn't see Jay Campbell to Kirk Lang, though, right?
No. But I know. I just know. Where I'm going to leave it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. This concludes our interview with Charlene Wilson, June 6, 2020. I'm Doc Washburn for News Radio 102.9 KRN, signing off.
God bless.